And it clicked at that moment that some people are designed to fill out spreadsheets, but a lot of other people are designed to know what spreadsheets should be filled out. And so that was the first step in me realizing that what I considered imposter syndrome, what I considered my biggest failure, was actually possibly a superpower. Possibly it was knowing the right thing to do. And that if I, instead of judging myself for being unable to finish things, if I could surround myself with people who were good at finishing the things that I could start, I might be able to build a bigger team that would elevate both of us.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Before we start the episode, I wanted to tell you about a show that we've been listening to, This New Economy. It's a podcast about humanity through the lens of economics. I recommend starting with their latest episode on Achieving Greatness that features Seth Godin, Foursquare's Dennis Crowley, and Laird Hamilton, the famous big wave surfer. It's not just about the tactics of achieving greatness, but the sacrifice behind those achievements. Search for This New Economy by Rocketship.fm on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is brought to you by our friends at HostGator. Whether you're looking to start a new website or move an existing one, HostGator can help. They have 24/7 live support via phone chat and email, an easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, and one-click WordPress installs if you want to get your hands dirty. And if you want to move from an existing host, it's free and simple. Visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. Manish, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Well, it is very cool to have you here. You know, so I had a chance to meet you several years ago, and I've gotten to kind of witness the evolution of your story, and it's been fascinating to watch. So I want to start with a question that I think is very relevant, and I'm pretty sure nobody has ever asked you, but I'm very curious to see how you'll answer this. What birth order were you, and what impact has that had on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Oh, have I thought about that a lot in my life? Okay, I'm the fourth in my family. Mm-hmm. I have an older sister. Her name is Nagina. She's 10 years older than I am. Then I have another sister who's 9 years older, Ruchita. Then I have my brother, Ramit Sethi, who I think you probably know. Mm-hmm. And so I Will Teach You to Be Rich. He's 5 years older than I am. And then there's me, the youngest. And it's had a massive, obviously clear impact on my behavior. When I was a kid, I was heavily ADD, and I didn't really care about stuff. And then I saw my sister get into a good college. Mm-hmm. She got into Berkeley. And I think that kind of became a waterfall down our entire sibling ship. Yeah. Whereas the next sister also got into Berkeley. And then my brother was like, well, I'm going to get into Stanford. And I always looked up to Ramith like a god. Uh-huh. And so I was like, well, I'm going to get into Stanford too. And so you could see it very clearly, because as I got to school, as I got to Stanford, it was like I worked in the same labs. I lived in the same dorms. I had the same major as him in a lot of ways, but we approached problems in a slightly different fashion. Uh-huh. And I would say that it had a massive impact on who I became.
Did you ever feel a sense of competition or inferiority or challenges with, you know, having such accomplished siblings? Because I think that, you know, that's an immense amount of pressure.
Yeah, I had a massive amount of imposter syndrome growing up, still till today, but at least now I know it's not real. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, growing up, my brother was the perfect kid in the family. Mm-hmm. You know, he was like he was always clean and neat. And my mom is an Indian mom. And she likes things being clean and neat and done. And so she was, he was the perfect kid. And then my mom was like always joking about how I was like my oldest sister was the crazy person. And then my brother was the perfect one. And then like I came back and started the cycle all over again. And so it led to like a lot of self-destructive thoughts. Uh-huh. And it's like one of the worst things that happened is that I ended up being fairly successful as a young kid. So like when I was 13, when I was 12, I wanted to make video games. And I posted in this My Heroes forum about, could I sometime write a book? He was an editor for a book series on video game making. And I was like, maybe someday when I get older, I could write a book on game programming for kids or something. Mm-hmm. And he replied back saying, you're too dumb, you're too stupid, and you're too young. I'll never hire anybody younger than 25. And this guy was like, made me so mad that I spent the next 4 days, I grabbed a, basically 4 days, I wrote 80 pages of a programming book, and I sent it above his head and pretended to be an adult and got a book deal. And it was a funny, it's crazy because it was called Game Programming for Teens. Uh-huh. The first 80 pages took me 4 days, and the next 120 pages took me like 2 years because the drive was gone. But what was crazy is that I had this like internal drive when there was a challenge in front of me. But as soon as the as soon as the story was cool, as soon as the book deal was done, then I lost the drive to finish the book, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. And that led to this, like, so finally the book is done, of course, like a year late, and the book ended up being a bestseller. It was an international bestseller in like a bunch of countries, including the US. It became translated and was a programming textbook in Poland. And I couldn't even program, barely. Nothing outside of the book I'd ever programmed. And it led to this, like, I got a TV show on Tech TV, and people were coming to me for advice on making games when I was 16. Uh-huh. And it led to this like massive imposter syndrome, where I'm like, how the hell am I getting to be successful and people regard me as successful, but then I'm actually internally an idiot, right? Uh-huh. So then I get to, and I started to judge my own metrics. My own value of worth is me saying I'm going to do something and being able to stick to that goal, me finishing something that I start. And I'm I'm in the 90th percentile for ADHD. Mm-hmm. And so I was never able to do that, but other people would come to me for advice. And that was pretty heartbreaking. So long story short, it led to a massive amount of imposter syndrome. Ramith was like the ability, he gave me the ability to kind of, he gave me my interests in psychology and marketing and online sales and writing. But his method of approaching problems was very different. And so as I tried to be him, I started to realize that I was very different from him as I went through college. And I dropped out of Stanford. I studied at Stanford, he did too. Mm-hmm. And I left to travel and start a blog. And that's kind of the beginning, that blog became the beginning of what I currently do, which is Pavlok, the wearable device that helps you change your habits.
Yeah, we'll get from, you know, from how you get to the blog to that. Mm-hmm. How did you at least resolve, or at least, you know, how did you attempt to resolve the imposter complex? Like, what did you do about it to, or how do you manage it, even if you're still dealing with it today?
In order to tell that story, I have to tell you about how I got to Pavlok, because mm-hmm. It happened after I started Pavlok. So is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what happened is I started a blog I was studying abroad in Europe and with Stanford. And, I found out that you could just leave for up to 2 years and they would just accept you back. And so I decided to take a leave of absence and I started a blog it was a travel blog called Hack the System, cheat codes for life. Mm-hmm. And basically my readers would vote on which country I would move to and what I would do in each country. And I started to travel around the world. It was like 5 years, essentially. I moved to like Italy, Spain, Argentina, Brazil, India, Mexico, whatever, Colombia. And in each city, I would do a new project. And what I found was that my own internal metric, again, of success, my external metric was very different. My internal metric was, did I go to the gym twice a week and did I write 2 articles a week? And in about 5 years, I hit that goal maybe twice. Mm-hmm. And I had nothing else to do. But then every single time I would write a blog post, it would go viral. Like 1 out of 5 would go viral. And I would get like, you know, at least 200 leads per average blog post. And then people would pay me for advice on how to get PR and stuff. And I'm like, I can't even write an article. So what happened was I started doing a series on trying to improve my productivity. And I hired this girl whose job was to follow me around. And every time I stopped writing and wasted time, she would just slap me in the face.
I remember that.
Yeah. And I posted that article online and it became this insane sensation. Yeah. It was in, NPR. I was on Anderson Cooper. I was like in 100 different news sources over 3 days. I was really famous for about 3 days. Uh-huh. And so I was like, oh, hey, that's cool. How do I get this to become like a secondary big idea? How do I double this up? I'm like, wait, what if I make a dog collar that can just zap me every time I go on Facebook? Uh-huh. And my friend is like, let's go to Radio Shack. Let's make it. So we made this like little broken hack together dog shot collar that zapped me when I went on Facebook to like 5 hours and a lot of drugs. And then I was about to post the video and I said to myself, this is really interesting. There's a million wearables out there that track what I do. This one is changing what I do. Maybe this should be a company. Uh-huh. So like a standard entrepreneur, I'm like, let's do it. Let's make it happen. And then you met me right around this time. I'm not sure if you met me right before or right after I had this imposter syndrome breakthrough.
Yeah.
So what happened is hardware is really, really hard. And very, very quickly, I ran out of money. And very, very quickly, I was about to die. And I was like trying to figure out a way to survive. So I started asking a bunch of friends if they could invest a little bit in my company. And one person in particular, James Swanick, he said, sure. He's like, hey, I'll give you 10K to invest in your company. All I want to do is just, can you send me over like a quick one pager, just a quick description of what you need and what you're doing. And I'll get you the money as soon as I can. So I was like, yeah, sure. I have a 4-hour train ride today and there's no problem. I'll do that right away. So I get on a train and 4 hours later, I have not even opened up Microsoft Word. And that was a hard feeling because it was like, what the hell am I doing? Yeah. And I said, I'm not going to go to sleep until I finish this project. So what happened is it's now like 9 a.m. I've been up all night. I've written maybe 20 words and I have a GIF. And I'm so stressed because this isn't like college where I can blame it on me not caring or it's going to be hard or I'll never get rewarded for this. It's like guaranteed $10,000. All I have to do is write like maybe 200 words. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And last ditch effort, I pulled out a video camera, my phone, and I recorded like a minute of me saying what I wanted to say into the camera. And this kid from Tufts, a kid from the university asked to intern a couple days earlier. So I said, hey, why don't you do this? Write this video into a post. And like an hour later, he sent me back what was the final draft for what I sent to James. And it clicked at that moment that some people are designed to fill out spreadsheets, but a lot of other people are designed to know what spreadsheets should be filled out. And so that was the first step in me realizing that what I considered imposter syndrome, what I considered my biggest failure, was actually possibly a superpower. Possibly it was knowing the right thing to do. And that if I, instead of judging myself for being unable to finish things, if I could surround myself with people who were good at finishing the things that I could start, I might be able to build a bigger team that would elevate both of us. Hmm. So that was step one. And then step two was, do you know Derek Halpern?
Yeah.
So Derek was a close friend of mine, also an investor in Pavlok, but this is before he invested. And he recommended this book for hiring teams. It was called The Art of Speed Reading People. It was about how do you identify other people's Myers-Briggs personality type and how do you utilize that information to change the way that you talk to them. And so I read this book and the first thing, the biggest thing I got out of it was figuring out my type, figuring out that and the difference between my type and my brother's type. And I don't know, a lot of people don't like, they instantly turn off and think it's like astrology. My answer is always like Myers-Briggs is just a model. If you throw the answers to four questions against a wall and you draw boxes, you know, you're going to get 16 boxes. Some people will be in the center. Some people will be in the corner. And it's not a perfect, like obviously there's more than just 16 people, but what it gives you is a model of people similar to you who you can learn from and understand a little bit more about who you might be. And I discovered that I and Ramif were extremely close. My personality type is the ENTP. His personality type is the ENTJ. Just one letter of difference. So both of us are E's. We're both extroverted. We both gain energy by talking to other people. We're both intuitives, which means we like to think about big ideas and projects and we think abstractly. We don't think about the past or gossip or the here and now. We're both thinkers, which means we make our decisions based on what's right, rational, and just, not always on how other people will feel. Mm-hmm. And lastly, the one thing that was different is that he's a judger and I'm a perceiver. Perceivers are starters and they feel uncomfortable finishing a task. Whereas judgers are finishers. They feel uncomfortable starting something new until they finish the first thing that they said they would finish. Mm-hmm. That one letter led to a massive difference. So massive that in a study by Time Magazine, they found that if you look at the average salaries mapped out against personality types, my type is the second lowest personality type, just under nurses, mm-hmm. and second lowest salary earning of all types. Whereas his is like 1.5x higher than the number two. It's the entire opposite scale of monetary growth. Mm-hmm. And that led to a breakthrough understanding that maybe I'm not broken. Maybe my strengths are suited for something that's different than his. The big difference between us is that his type is like the executive type. It's the Tim Cook. It's the guy who's given a plan and given a project and given one dependent variable, and they will execute and craft a perfect plan to achieve that goal, and they will assign the tasks to the proper people to make sure that task gets done properly and well done. That's my brother's type. That's also like the king of all types in American society. Mm-hmm. My type is the inventor type. It's the Steve Jobs type. It's the guy who has big ideas, who's like, we should start all these ideas. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's fix things that aren't broken. And it's like, you put the two together and it's like, hey, we should go to space. All right, Richard Branson, like, let's take a break and start with like a regular plane. And maybe like in 20 years, we'll talk about space. It's the combination of Tim Cook and Steve Jobs. It's the combination of Edison and Tesla that was able to make these big idea projects become actually executed and finished. Mm-hmm. And so that was my biggest breakthrough, that as a person who feels he's like uncomfortable finishing stuff, I'm not supposed to finish stuff. I'm supposed to surround myself with people who want to have something to finish. And that led to my big breakthrough on imposter syndrome.
Wow. You know, one of the things that's really interesting is you know, this idea of success at such a young age. And I'm curious how you didn't, you know, rest on your laurels. You know, how did you make sure that you didn't lose your motivation just because you've had this success? Because I think that's one of the big dangers.
I didn't have success. I hated myself. That's the reason. Because yeah. I hated myself. I couldn't get myself. I was a liar. I was an imposter. I was a fraud. That's why. It's because like everything was about like that. Well, first of all, that was like a part. Number one, I didn't think of myself as successful. I never ever, I still think of myself as the dumbest person in my company. But secondly, it's also because I have no capability or I mean, I'm not good at resting on my laurels. Like I can't even imagine what that would be. Mm-hmm. But I'm always distracted by shiny objects or the cool new thing that I could or should be doing. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that I know ENTPs in general absorb information really well. Like when we're in new societies, like I learned languages in 3 months, I speak 5 languages. And like you absorb information extremely quickly. And in particular, I'm very able to connect dots across different categories of creativity. Mm-hmm. I believe that very heavily, and the science actually shows that creativity is by definition, the opposite of focus. And if that's something interesting to you, I'd love to talk about that a little later on. But your question was focused on why did I not rest on my laurels? And my answer is I couldn't rest on my laurels because I couldn't. I had to get distracted. But laurels are a weird thing to say because I don't think that there is, like, if I had made a lot of money, like, it's like, I used to work with Tim Ferriss. I lived with Tim Ferriss during the 4-Hour Chef. I was his right-hand man to launch. And people would always ask, so like, does he actually work 4 hours a week? And I'm like, dude, what is he going to do for the rest of the weeks, the rest of the hours? He's just going to like look at a wall, right? Like, is he going to go just like sit there? Like, you know how boring it gets to like, I broke through passive income at like 21. I made my first viral video. That was like me. I spent less. I moved to India and I figured out how to do an AdSense business that would create automated passive income. And it was so boring because I had nothing to do, right? It's like the kind of person who's able to develop an automated or passive income business is the kind of person who will not be satisfied by a passive income business, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so there's no choice.
Yeah. Yeah, totally does. I'm curious what impact watching your brother sort of rise to the level of success that he did had on you. You know, because I know you talked about it in childhood. I'm curious, like, as you guys have gotten older, what impact has that had on you? And, you know, I think you and I kind of talked about this when I met you in person. Do you ever feel that you're like living in a shadow at moments? Because I noticed a question the other that you'd put on Facebook about email open rates. And I was like, why wouldn't you just ask your brother? Apparently his are off the charts.
You know, like I'm assuming he doesn't listen to this podcast. So I'll say this. Have you ever read the book, Pitch Anything?
Yeah. I know of it. Yeah.
You know, he talks about like frame control and how there's always a frame that individuals have when they meet each other. And there's like a coach and a client frame, or there's like an investor investee frame.
Yeah.
And that when two people interact, that frame is created and minds and melds and creates kind of how your relationship will be for a long time. Uh-huh. And it's very hard to get out of that frame. You familiar with that concept?
Yeah.
So forever, my brother has been my, my mentor, he is the teacher and I'm the learner frame. Uh-huh. And that was a very good relationship for us. So, you know, he invested a lot of money in my company. He helped me out a lot. He gave me a ton of advice. I would ask him. He was the one guy who I would ask every question to when I wasn't sure. Uh-huh. And so starting off at Hack the System, he was, you know, a big mentor. He never, ever, like one time I asked him if I could write a guest post on the site. And he's like, ask Tim Ferriss, you've got a better chance. he treats us as a kid, as like all the students, and like he treats the whole family as, if you don't do it or pay for it, you won't get the value out of it, which I think is true to an extent, but also, you know, sometimes it's not. But in that same sense, it's like he would be the hard, like when I was making decks for pitching to investors, he was the one asking the hardest questions, right? He was trying to give me the questions that he thought I needed to know for myself. So that became a very powerful and very helpful, he became a very, very, very helpful person. Not just questions like email rates, but like questions about like, how should I hire? What roles do I need? But then like over time, especially at my company, it became kind of strange. Because I'd start to ask questions, I'd start to talk. Like I like talking, and I don't always come to you. You know, if I talk to you, I'm not always asking you a question. Sometimes I'm just chatting, you know? Uh-huh. And I would talk about something we're doing, and he would start giving me advice. And it was impossible for us to break out of that frame. Or at least, I don't know, it led to like just confusion and problems because I see the world in a different way. So specifically, one thing that was making me like confused was like, I started talking about our supply chain issues and how we had this like inventory problem. And my brother started giving me advice on how to fix the inventory problem. And I'm like, dude, like in my mind, I had never said this, but I'm like, dude, like you have no idea how inventory businesses work. Like it's a totally different game. Like, we're not talking about a digital product that's auto-fulfilled. We're talking about, you know, 84 components, 14 suppliers, and making sure that we're paying the right people at the right time with like net 30 to net 90 terms. If you're giving me advice that doesn't make sense at this moment. But this frame is already created. Mm-hmm. And I started to notice that like if we started talking about business, we would just clash heads. And it wasn't like I was talking about it for advice or wanted to clash heads. It just was how the conversation would go. Mm-hmm. So I stopped really talking to him about business as I start to grow in the last couple of years and focus a lot more on, you know, just being a brother.
Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by DesignCrowd. Unmistakable Creative listeners have used DesignCrowd for logo, web, and graphic design. Here's how it works. You go to designcrowd.com and you set up your design brief, and you'll get submissions from anywhere between 60 to 100 designers from around the world. If you like the designs you get, you can then improve payment. If you don't like what you get, you can go back to the crowd and ask for more, or ask for your money back. To see what other Unmistakable Creative listeners have designed and save $100 on your first project, visit designcrowd.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for $100 off. Today's episode is also sponsored by our friends at HostGator. They host your website and they have 24/7 live support via phone, chat, and email. An easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, one-click WordPress installs, and if you want to switch from an existing host to HostGator, it's free and it's simple. And because you're an Unmistakable Creative listener, you're getting 30% off all of their hosting packages. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. So walk me through kind of what has happened from sort of the evolution of BlogBlog to now and since I met you, because I know a lot of really interesting things have happened, Shark Tank being one of them. So, you know, give us the overview of how, you know, what has happened in the last few years. What have been the ups and downs? What have been the challenges?
Sure. Hardware is really, really, really hard. It's really hard. And if I had known what I was getting myself into, I never would have done it. So I guess I met you at Bolt, so it was in the first 6 months. So I probably had like, I don't know, did I have a dog collar for you or did I have an alpha prototype for you? Do you remember?
I don't think, I got to see like some 3D printing. I don't even know if you guys have a prototype yet.
Got it. So basically, here's what happened. Let me see if we can do a quick summary of Pavlok. So started the idea, built it August 2013. I got invested in to come, give me, I got up. Okay, so there was like an incubator called Bolt, you've seen it, where they help startup companies make hardware products. And I was in their first class, and they had 7 slots that they were going to invest $50,000 in. And 6 of the slots were like B2B companies, B2C companies, people with really big background and team and hardware, a medical company. And then they had 1 slot, which was the wild card. And I was the wild card. It was the dude who has no hardware experience, has a good idea, let's see what happens. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they invested in my idea. And so I came to live in Boston. And around that time, I met you. So the first step was, what the fuck is hardware? Like, how does this work? Like, it's easy, right? You just sit down, you make it, you're done. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that at all. So basically, the first step for us was figuring out, for me, was figuring out what the heck I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so that was basically understanding that hardware, and particularly wearables, is broken down into, you know, a bunch of parts, specifically software, which is firmware plus iOS plus Android app plus web. Then it's also broken down into hardware, which is electrical engineering plus industrial design plus mechanical engineering. And that's just to make a prototype. From there, you have to get customer service, fulfillment, shipping, manufacturing, support, customer support, and then a team to manage ops, right? So all these things take a long time. And I got lucky enough that my first and my original co-founder, he was with us for about 6 months, got us from idea to prototype, but we couldn't afford him and he had a family. His name is Jim Lynch. He was the original inventor of Lego Mindstorms. Mm-hmm. And he was the head of VP, he was the VP of engineering at the, for the Roomba at iRobot. And he taught me, he basically taught me that you can break down a new hardware product into two, like just the hardware side, so not the app side, into two parts. There's a two prototypes. There's a looks like prototype and a works like prototype. The looks like prototype is supposed to be pretty and industrial designed and 3D printed. And the works like prototype is a big ass piece of green printed circuit board where you like plug things in and make sure everything works, right? And so our first step was to get those two things made. And I think this is one of my smartest decisions I ever made. My goal was to create a dog, was to take the dog shock collar from that funny joke video and convert it into a smart Bluetooth wearable that could lock to your wrist and would help you stop doing your habits based on data, right? And so the first thing we did was break it down into a looks like and works like. So the works like we broke into two parts, which was the knowns, that's the vibrating buzzer, the Bluetooth chip, and the unknowns, which was the Zap, the thing that had never been invented or created before. And I took that Zap and I said, instead of just making it cool, or instead of just making it work, what if we made it a business card? What if we designed this to be like, just instead of being green, let's make it black, let's make it sexy. And we did, and this became my calling card, a little shocking business card that when I met somebody, they'd grab it and they would understand the feeling. And so that was a really good decision because it really grabbed people's attention. So once we got all these different components working, then we worked on trying to merge it. Big breakthrough here was that I stopped raising money and I realized that we had to survive and that in order to survive, I would have to pull back on my vision of a locking wristband and focus just on the pure core of the device that zaps, vibrates, and beeps. And so that led to us creating this little wearable that the alpha was pretty big and it looks like a giant wristwatch with a little cut lightning bolt. And we made 40 of these. And so what happened was this, we made 40 of these for this prototype. And then suddenly I look at my financial statement and I'm like a week away from death. I mean, like I owe $20,000 and I have like 9,000 in my bank account and salaries are going to hit in 2 weeks. And so payroll. And so what I did was like, I was like, all right, I'm going to die. I have to sell these products, these 40 alpha units. And everybody was like, you can't do that. Don't do that. You can't do that. It's a shock device. You don't have a UPC code. You haven't made sure that the FTC clearance is done. You know, da, 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 da. And I'm like, look, guys, it doesn't matter because if I don't do it, I'm dead. So I have to do it. And so what I did was I hosted a webinar where I announced for the first time the thing I'd been working on. And we ended up grossing $25,000 in pre-orders and alpha sales from that one night webinar, saved the company. And what was interesting about it was that those 40 customers who bought that alpha unit were the best customers ever because they paid real money. So when stuff didn't work, they told me. When it wasn't perfect, they told me. They were actual beta testers and not bullshit like ask your friends to try it out. Beta testers. Mm-hmm. So that was going from, that was basically getting us to alpha shipment. Then what happened was we got to beta shipment and then there was a big shift of the company, a massive shift of the company. And that happened on October 31st, 2014, right in the middle of our first crowdfunding campaign. What happened was we had been running a crowdfunding campaign for this smart wearable device that zapped you when you did bad things. So it had to know when you did things. And we discovered a clinical trial on, first it was just one, on smoking cessation. And there was a title of a type of therapy called aversion therapy, which was a method of creating a Pavlovian association to breaking bad habits, utilizing either a bad smell or an electric shock. You ever get really, maybe you or do you have any friends who ever got really drunk on a type of alcohol, often tequila, get sick, and then never drink that drink again?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, totally. Tequila is that thing for me.
It is great. And if you imagine it right now or you smelled it, you would feel like right in the pit of your stomach is where you would feel that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you look in the brain, it's called, you can see that same feeling in the brain. It's called an aversion. And it's a one night, one time bad experience that you suffer while you do something, while you do a habit that trains your reptile brain to often permanently have a long lasting negative association towards that habit. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting in the first place. What was really interesting was the results. So you think about smoking. The first study that I'm talking about was a study of 834 people who had gone through a quit smoking program. So if you think of quitting smoking cold turkey, 5% of people are successful at quitting smoking cold turkey. If you were to use Nicorette patches, what would you guess the success rate is?
Not too high.
It's 7.5% effective. Or the ads are amazing. 50% more effective than quitting cold turkey. Right? Mm-hmm. From 5 to 7.5. Meanwhile, and that's if you take it every day for 6 months. Meanwhile, aversion therapy in this study from the 80s showed that 5 days of therapy, which was basically the doctor would say, all right, bring the cigarette to your mouth and zap yourself. Bring the cigarette to your mouth and zap yourself. And do that on repeat. You're going to want to put the cigarette down, but keep it going so your brain starts to be trained. At a year follow-up, it led to greater than 50% of people had not touched a single cigarette after just 5 days. Mm-hmm. And that to me was mind-boggling for two reasons. Number one, breaking bad habits that were self-administered was enormous. Number two, long-lasting effects for things like smoking was even bigger. And I was blown. And number three is that the product was like that. Because of these studies, that study, it's already an FDA classification. That without even having to do an FDA trial, we're a class two medical device, which means that we have to show safety standards, but we don't have to run a full trial in order to be FDA cleared because the FDA is already cleared.
Yeah.
So that was like a big, big, big shift in the company where it's like, okay, wait, what if instead of about caring about what I care about, which is productivity and waking up early and being fit, what if instead I cared about what we're already successful at and can be successful at again, which is quitting bad habits. There's nothing in the world that helps you stop bad habits. So that became the big shift for our company where we focused instead. Pavlok became not the wearable that shocks you, but instead it was the wearable that helps you break bad habits. Mm-hmm. And we started testing and reproducing these studies. We reproduced one study where we took the same exact protocol with UMass Boston. Out of 8 people, six of them were smoke-free at a 6-month follow-up, 75% cessation rate. And so that became the big shift for the company. And I know I've gotten pretty deep on this part. So that was 2014, we started the shift. All of 2015, we were a break bad habits device. Mm-hmm. In September 2015, we filmed Shark Tank. Shark Tank was not particularly successful. I can talk about that if you want later.
Yeah,
for sure. And so what I realized was this. It's that number one, people didn't believe it. The numbers were too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And also you're supposed to press the button yourself. And it works better if you press the button. And people just didn't seem to believe it. Number two, we started to see that people had, number two was our software got better. So we started to get better at specific habits. And a lot of people started asking us for an alarm clock app. So we made a simple alarm clock app, just zapped you at the time you're supposed to wake up. And that was a second humongous shift for our product because we got like 40 emails with the same words in it, which was, thank you so much. I used to be a night owl and now I'm a morning person. Those words over and over again. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty big because I've always been a morning person. So alarms didn't bother me. But these people were like sending us articles or sending us videos or sending us text about how they had been fired from every job because they just couldn't get out of bed, or that they took sleeping pills and the sleeping pills held them back from getting up, and Zap was the only thing that worked. And so what we did is we, in preparation for Shark Tank's airing in May of 2016. Mm-hmm. We launched a second crowdfunding campaign for a product called Shock Clock. And Shock Clock was basically the same device, the same hardware as a Pavlok that was stripped of all the bad habit features and only had the alarm clock features. And we launched that on Indiegogo. And it actually did, it was more successful than our first one. Same hardware, limited, and it was upgradable in the future to the full Pavlok. Mm-hmm. And it, like, the first one did $284,000. This one did $343,000. So that was a big shift where we started looking at the morning and the night, and that the habits of your day are often formed by the habits of your sleep routine and your morning routine. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we've been focused heavily, and right now we're in the middle of an Indiegogo campaign. I don't know when this is gonna go live, but it ends June 30th. And we're launching Pavlok 2 in September, which is everything I've ever been, I've always been trying to make, which is the culmination of all of the, not just the sleep features, mm-hmm. not just the wake up features, not just the bad habits features, but it's a platform. It's like an app store within an app where we can release new apps that trigger haptic vibration behaviors, vibrations, beeps, and zaps, and new developers can write their own apps that integrate directly into our hardware to make it a platform for behavior change and not just our thoughts on what behavior change should be. So that's been like kind of the progress of the company up and towards right now where we're focused on the psychology and how do we we've gotten really good at positive reinforcement to help you. Like, we've found that negative reinforcement and zap helps you start doing things, but positive reinforcement makes you stick to doing things. Mm-hmm. And that we combine the two, both through touch and also through our in-app currency called Volts, where you earn points for doing healthy actions that become like a positive reinforcer. So that's kind of the progress of the story.
Well, let's talk about the Shark Tank thing, because I got to see that and I was like, wow, that was rough. And I remember you even mentioned it. You mentioned that Mark Cuban even referenced it, I think, on how I built this with Guy Raz. Tell me what the experience was like. How did you keep your confidence from being shaken by going through something so rough?
Oh, my confidence was strengthened by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because they were ridiculous. So, I mean, if you saw it, like, there's two types of people who saw the show. Mm-hmm. There's the people who see the show. Okay, so here's what happens. Mark Cuban, I get on the show, and I assumed Mark Cuban was going to love it because he's like a tech guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, make a wearable. It helps you break bad habits. Here's these stories. Here's a study we run. And then he goes, and I gave him this booklet of these 21 clinical trials that were effective for that were the basis of aversion therapy, why FDA is approved the science. Our device is not, just to be clear, our device has not yet finished the process for the FDA clearance, so I'm not trying to say I'm a medical device. But I showed him the documents on the evidence behind aversion therapy. And he looks at it and he goes, and he just starts off within seven minutes of the airing, within of talking, he's like, you're a con artist. You're trying to claim other people's studies as your own. You are a liar because you're lying and saying that you're using their studies. You have to run your own clinical trial. You're not allowed to talk about other studies. And I was like, wait, what? That's not how science works. Like, science is built on you finding studies that show how things work, and you iterate upon those studies in order to move the world forward. And it was so shaken at that moment that it really set the stage for the rest of 45 minutes I was up there. And so the way I describe Shark Tank is this. You ever see Lion King?
Yeah.
So Mark Cuban is Mufasa. Mm-hmm. Mr. Wonderful is Scar. And the other three are hyenas. So they, like, you can see, if you watch it at the beginning, you'll see Lori, her head is nodding positively. Robert bites his nails and he looks at his nails. And like, Mr. Wonderful is sitting there with his Mr. Burns fingers, like, straight up scarring, seeing that there's an opportunity. Then Mark Cuban goes crazy. And, like, do you remember that part where he started calling me a con artist?
I vaguely remember it. I've seen the clip on YouTube.
Do you remember, like, if you felt like, whoa, Manish is getting, this is crazy how fast he's attacking him? Or was it like, whoa, Mark Cuban's right. Maybe Manish is a con artist. Like,
no, I mean, you really, I was kind of amazed at how brutal it was.
Yeah, it was so brutal. And so what happened was, like, to me, I was like, wait, this is so obviously brutal. And he so obviously got the wrong foundational argument right here, uh-huh. that whatever happens, like, I was like, I didn't feel uncomfortable. I mean, I felt like ADHD and distracted up there, but I didn't feel like, anyway, so what happens is Mark Cuban's like out. He didn't even try it. He didn't even felt his act. And then the other three are out. And then Mr. Wonderful's there waiting. He sees an opportunity. He waits. He offers me the amount of money I asked for. Uh-huh. But my biggest issue with him was that he was on camera saying that 3.5 billion people living on a dollar a day is a good thing for humanity. Uh-huh. There's a video. If you search 3.5 billion, Kevin O'Leary, you'll see it. Yep. And our product is not a profit. Our company is not a profit-driven company. Our company is a habit-driven company. My goal is to change the way that people act. My goal is to help people quit addiction. Yeah. If I have to give away my product for free, I will give away my product for free. But and to that end, Mr. Wonderful was not a good partner. Yeah. In no way is he a good partner. And so I, if you watch the show and you watch it without like and try to rewatch it and like imagine that the sound effects aren't there and the zooming angles aren't there and you just hear the words that I say, I'm extremely polite. I'm like, Mr. Wonderful, unfortunately, and I'm trying to just get the words out that I don't want to say yes, but they keep badgering me until I say, I'm saying, Mr. Wonderful, I'm not going to take your deal. And he looks at me, I say, no, I declined. And he looked at me, he's like, F you, you a-hole, F you, instantly. Mm-hmm. As soon as I said, I'm turning you down, he said, F you, you a-hole, F you. And my head gets shaken and I smile and I'm like, well, obviously that's not a good partner. If you say something and he curses you out, like obviously it's not a good partner. The world will see that. I will come out as looking like a guy who's like, you know, good. And then I saw the cut. The way they cut the 45 minutes of the show down to 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. And especially with the zooming angles and my weird facial expression, it's like, they made me look like an asshole. And which is really like not fair because I'm just trying to help people. And so what was interesting though was that there were two very different schools of thought. Mm-hmm. And here was what happened. It was right after the show aired, less than an hour later, I had 39 fake one-star Amazon reviews.
Wow.
I went from a 4.8 star product to a 2.9 star product, like overnight. And even till today, we can't get these things freaking removed. Uh-huh. And it really shattered my, like, it's like it shattered a lot of my own intrinsic thoughts about how human change happens. I don't know. That's a whole different depressing story, but like, you're asking about how did Shark Tank affect it. Yeah. So what happened was that happened. We got two very different schools of thought. You have one school of thought that's like, whoa, that guy's getting hammered and science is science. Why are you talking like Mark Cuban, whoa, what is going on with him today? And the other school of thought was Mark Cuban says he's a con artist, therefore he's a con artist, therefore I'm going to give him a one-star Amazon review, start writing death threats, and try to find his phone number and call him and then give him death threats to his phone number, yeah. Which started happening a lot, like a lot. So me getting death threats over the last year became actually like kind of fun. I found some fun tricks to make them enjoyable. But I started getting, you know, I'd say about 1 to 4 death threats a day. So it started off being small, like kill yourself. And then it got to be like, I'm going to kill you in your sleep on a phone call, right? It's kind of scary shit. Uh-huh. And I found a really cool trick to make me stop calling, which is probably not family friendly. So I just won't tell you.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what happened was until today, I get a couple every week or so, but it's like fine. So that was how the show, that's what happened with the show. But I realized that like, okay, so here's what happened. About a year and a half later, Mark Cuban was on NPR on How I Built This. Uh-huh. And he talked about con artists and how like, if you're like Pavlov, you know, it's, he said my company's name on NPR. If you listen to the interviewer, interviewer was like, super intrigued by the idea.
Yeah.
And Mark Cuban was talking about being a con artist. And then like right after that, I think it was December or something last year, he was on a show on Access Hollywood, I think. Uh-huh. And he's like, you look at these con artists, like that guy, like Pavlov, like zapping yourself. Like I will nail your ass against a wall, he says on TV. And I watched that video. It's at pavlov.com/Mark Cuban. Uh-huh. cracks me up because it's like he's going to nail my ass against a wall. Not to a wall, but against a wall. Is Mark Cuban giving me rape threats? Damn. So that made me crack up because instantly, well, within about 4 weeks, Dallas became our number two best-selling city after New York. Dallas is now still our number two best-selling city. So I am, like, excited because here's the thing. If my product was a con or our product didn't work or we didn't have above 50% cessation rates and we hadn't sold 50,000 units and we hadn't helped so many people quit nail biting, quit smoking, quit unhealthy eating, get over sugar, lose 20 pounds, get over PTSD in a few cases, it's insane. If it hadn't been for the fact that our product worked, I would be decimated and destroyed. But because our product actually works, I can't wait to see when he gets mad at me again, because I know he's gonna have to get over it at some point. It's almost like if you're on Shark Tank and like, imagine if like Mark Zuckerberg came on to Shark Tank like a decade ago. And he's like, I've got this idea for a social network that's gonna like connect kids and help them become friends. And they're like, that's a stupid idea. We already have Friendster. That's a stupid idea. We already have it. Who would ever wanna use that? Like, that would be, I feel like it's like part of the story of our company. And I feel like it's part of our I'm always going to be hated by these initial viewers, but I get these messages every day on our Facebook bot. And it's like I start talking to the users who start at these like, you're stupid, you're a con artist. And I start talking to them and I'm like able to convert trolls into buying the product about half the time. Which I think is pretty cool. And on top of that, I think that like, I think it'll be part of the storyline. I'll probably and likely do another episode on Shark Tank. And I think it'll be a really, really interesting, part of our journey.
Very, very cool. This has been really fascinating. So I have one last question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews with the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
How do you define unmistakable?
That's really up to you.
Say the question again.
What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Something very distinctive. Something very clear. I think of it in terms of remarkable. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I define remarkable is one of our core values of the company. I define remarkable is something that's worth being remarked about. Mm-hmm. It's something that's interesting with a twist. And I mean that in the sense of it's interesting to have someone sit down next to you and watch you while you do your work. It's unmistakable or remarkable when that person also slaps you because you don't do it. Mm. I feel like it's normal to get a personal trainer and it's weird to get a personal coach, but it's unmistakable to get a personal coach who can see what you're doing and be able to zap you if you're not doing it. And I feel like all the way since I was a kid, it was that small little twist at the end. It's taking what's interesting with a twist. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes things unmistakable.
Awesome. Well, where can people learn more about Pavlok?
Sure. Go to pavlok.com. Will this go live before the end of the month or will it be in like a few months?
It'll be about 2 weeks.
Okay, so if it's after, whatever, go to pavlok.com/unmistakable, and I'll put up some stuff about really cool information. Also, oh yeah, cool new thing. We have an app now that you don't need a Pavlok for to get started on breaking habits. So if you go to the Pavlok, if you go to the App Store on iOS or Android, download the Pavlok Core app and listen to the intro course, and we'll teach you how to break bad habits and how this whole thing works with just rubber band. So pavlok.com/unmistakable, or just go to the App Store and download the Pavlok Core app.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.